What if you could see the future?
I have a very passionate concern for posterity.
Once in a generation, someone surprises us by making impossible predictions that turn out to be true. Frank Herbert was one of these people. In his Dune saga, Herbert predicted the global war on terror and its outcome. He foresaw the human relationship with artificial intelligence. Somehow, Herbert anticipated the changes in global politics that are now occurring nearly half a century after his death. Perhaps most importantly, he proposed a path humans could take to free themselves from endlessly repeating the cycles that allowed a mind such as his to see the future. Herbert's deep understanding in three areas give us six keys that unlock his secret to seeing the future. We can use these keys for ourselves to analyze his ultimate prediction. Could his proposal truly free humanity from our inane predictability? It all starts with ecology.
Oh no, nothing like that. I was a 4-H kid who milked cows in the morning and night. Did all kinds of odd things, like hoeing gardens.
During some of his most formative years, Frank Herbert grew up on a farm tending to cows and chickens. These experiences, alongside his insatiable curiosity, developed into a lifelong passion for ecology. In many ways, his ecological vision helped to shape the conservationist environmentalism of the late 60s and 70s. Herbert's ecological conception of the world is one where the environment both shapes and is shaped by humanity. This brings us to Herbert's first predictive key. Geography is destiny. This idea that the physical landscape in which people develop fundamentally shapes their culture, politics, and even their psychology is central to the narrative of Dune and its depiction of the desert planet Arrakis. One of Herbert's most direct articulations of this philosophy is contained in Dune. Environment is a sculptor, a painter. If the environment is the primary factor in shaping us, then we must pay attention to the actions we allow it to take. We see the dramatic impact of geography on humanity most clearly in the Fremen of Dune. Because of their desert planet, their entire culture revolves around water conservation, religion, tradition, politics. There's nothing the Fremen do that isn't somehow connected to collecting and preserving water from the desiccating effects of the desert. While in Herbert's conception, geography is destiny, it is not fate in the classical sense. Herbert envisions humans as having a unique ability to channel our creative potential into altering our environment and exerting some measure of control as to where geography will take us. This leads us to Herbert's second predictive key. Everything is connected. Ecological interconnectedness is the concept Herbert visualizes as being fundamental to humanity's ability to exert control over geography and direct our own development as a species.
We have the latitude to do enormous changes in this society. We have the energy resources to make these changes. However, these are not simple changes I'm talking about.
No, they're not
really simple changes.
In every ecosystem, there are levers, fulcrums which we can manipulate to produce change in the environment around us.
I don't know, date palms could even be found out here.
Oh, these aren't indigenous. They can't survive without me. Each one of these drinks every day the equivalent of 5 men. 20 palm trees. 100 lives.
What may seem like a relatively inconsequential change can cascade and revolutionize what we perceive as possible. You may have heard of this concept as it relates to wolves in Yellowstone. In the early 20th century, wolves in Yellowstone National Park had been hunted to extinction. This allowed deer and elk to multiply with no natural predators. They ate with abandon through trees and grasses that numerous species relied upon for their survival. The number of beavers decreased, further altering the landscape as wetlands the beavers created through their dams disappeared. In the mid-90s, wolves were reintroduced to Yellowstone, and the landscape came back to life with biological diversity as deer and elk were once again constrained.
Do you know what this place is? It's an old ecological testing station. They were meant to tame the planet, free the water locked beneath the sands. Arrakis could have been a paradise.
These environmental fulcrums produced by interconnectedness lead us to the next domain where Herbert possessed great wisdom: politics.
I've done many things. I have a very checkered career, and I've looked for jobs that taught me things. I've been a speechwriter and researcher for a United States senator, for example. That's where I learned politics.
Herbert's deep understanding of politics can be seen everywhere in the Dune saga. House Atreides is brought to Dune as the Emperor seeks to play two major political powers against each other and preserve his own power.
How can the Emperor take everything we've built and give it to that Duke? How?
Don't be too sure it's an act of love.
When is a gift not a gift? The Atreides' voice is rising. The Emperor is a jealous man. A dangerous, jealous man.
Military might, economic productivity, and control over trade routes all feature prominently as the political ground in which the people of Dune exist. The ecological fulcrums, which allow humans to have power over their geography, also allow humans to exercise power over each other. Here's Herbert's first predictive key in the domain of politics: hydraulic despotism. In Dune, Herbert allows Baron Harkonnen to summarize this key.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
The concept of hydraulic despotism is that if you can control the water supply, you can control people. We see examples of hydraulic empires in ancient Egypt, the Indus Valley civilization, and in Chinese civilization along the Yellow River. These empires were able to exert tremendous power over their subjects because they controlled irrigation necessary for agriculture. In Herbert's imagined future, the spice melange is required to allow humans to travel between star systems, with all travel and trade being reliant upon this one good that is only produced in one place in the entire universe. We find ourselves with the most powerful fulcrum imaginable, the sort of thing you'll only find in science fiction. It's no wonder then that control over spice production is intensely fought over. There is no greater source of power, and it's all concentrated on the planet Arrakis.
And it's a very dangerous thing in this day and age, because technology has given us the tools of self-destruction. And if you put those tools in the hands of sick leaders, then we're really in trouble.
This leads us to Herbert's second predictive key in the domain of politics: power attracts corruption.
And those power structures tend to be taken over by people who are corruptible. I don't think that the old saw about power corrupting absolutely is accurate. I think power attracts the corruptible.
Herbert had a deep distrust of kings and messiahs. While he realizes that leaders may be necessary, or even good in some sense or instance, he recognized that inescapable corruptibility seems to appear wherever power is cultivated, regardless of a leader's character or intent.
I think that our society was formed on a distrust for government, and we seem to have lost that distrust of government. I kid around and I say that my favorite president in recent years has been Richard Nixon, because he taught us to distrust government.
If every leader inevitably attracts the seeds of their own corruption, then what hope do we have to possibly expand into the stars? Are we destined to simply become fodder for the decadent lifestyles of those who grasp at the levers of power until humanity's death rattle? Herbert didn't think so. He thought that there just might be a path to a utopian universe filled with humanity's children. That brings us to the third area where Herbert possessed great wisdom: religion.
They say is religious commentary. The thing that has often been aimed at it is that it's philosophical fiction rather than science fiction.
While Islam is the religion most popularly associated with Dune, Herbert actually grew up with deeply Catholic influences. Much to his agnostic father's protest, Herbert's aunt sought to instill their Jesuit Catholic traditions in a young Frank. This impact was so deep that Herbert named one of the primary factions in the Dune saga after them. The Bene Gesserit were a not-so-secret society that guided humanity through religious proselytization and a human eugenics program designed to both unite the political families of the Dune universe and produce an overman who could see the future and guide humanity to the best path. Throughout the Dune saga, Herbert repeatedly addresses the union of religion and political powers. Early in Dune, we learn that the Bene Gesserit have seeded Arrakis with messianic prophecies that will be of assistance to Lady Jessica and Paul Atreides.
In creating the characters for Dune, I went to the Messiah story that's so strong in our mythology.
These Bene Gesserit messianic prophecies parallel Third Temple prophetic interpretations that were seeded into American Christianity during the late 19th and early 20th centuries by John Darby and Cyrus Schofield. This prophetic lens, commonly known as dispensationalism, was essential for gathering popular and political support from America for a number of wars that were probably not in the United States' best interest to participate in. This is Herbert's first predictive key in the domain of religion. Prophecy is potential. A population's future is guided and contained by the religious prophetic narrative that its people believe. It's only once you understand the prophecies that capture a people's imagination that you can begin to see their potential. Because the Fremen of Arrakis have been primed with messianic prophecies, when Paul Atreides fulfills these prophecies, he gains the support of the Fremen and can lead them to fulfilling their potential.
Do you see so little hope?
On Arrakis, we have done all we can for you. A path has been laid. Let's hope he doesn't squander it.
Muad'Dib's Jihad even more explicitly deals with the union of religion and politics. When Paul Atreides becomes emperor, he unleashes jihad on the universe that closely parallels the Islamic Caliphate during the Rashidun period. During Muad'Dib's Jihad, the Fremen spread their religion throughout the known universe, enforcing their morals via unimaginable violence. They sterilize 90 planets and convert men through the sword and women via forced marriage. Along the way, they end up exterminating every competing religion that they come across. While the Fremen, following Caliph Atreides, were convicted of the righteousness of their cause, for Emperor Paul, this was simply a distasteful means to exterminate any potential challengers to his throne. This is Herbert's final predictive key: inevitable triumph. Herbert clearly believed that there was no force more potent and destructive than the explicit union of religious and military powers. To quote Herbert, "When religion and politics travel in the same cart, the riders believe nothing can stand in their way. Their movements become headlong, faster and faster and faster. They put aside all thoughts of obstacles and forget the precipice does not show itself to the man in a blind rush until it's too late." Herbert realized that what happens after the religious fervor tears across a landscape may be uncertain. But if you need a wrecking ball, nothing else will do.
It's coming. I see a holy war spreading across the universe like unquenchable fire. A warrior religion that waves the Atreides banner in my father's name. Fanatical legions worshiping at the shrine of my father's skull. A war in my name! Everyone shouting my name!
Oh. Oh, Jacobs.
Get off me! You did this to me! You Bene Gesserit made me a freak!
Herbert himself was a Zen Buddhist, and it's clear in his work that he took all religions very seriously. He seems to recognize the dichotomy between organized religion and personal religious experience while still finding great value in organized religion, a rare trait to come across when many of his contemporaries seem to have only contempt for organized religion. Now that we've dealt with religion, we can analyze Herbert's ultimate prediction. Here's Herbert's grand proposal for human flourishing: a long rule by a theocracy. Not a 100-year rule, but hundreds of generations.
We're just going to have to bite the bullet on some things and say this is going to cost us.
In his saga, humanity expands and flourishes only because the God Emperor, Leto II, becomes a great filter that humanity must evolve around. In Herbert's conception, human suffering was primarily an evolutionary problem.
I think people are responding to leadership overtures out of a very deep-seated instinctual process that goes back to our tribal roots, when we were tribesmen and possibly evolved into the wise old men who led the tribe if we lived long enough. And I think that this is something that just comes with the genes. We're born with it.
If our propensity to elect kings and religious zealots to rule and guide us is simply genetic predisposition, what better way to eliminate this internal roadblock to our success than to externalize it in a god emperor and allow evolution to do what it does best?
I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
If every ruler will be corrupted, then we must evolve beyond the need for rulers. We must become self-sufficient and unpredictable to the inhuman vision of the prophetic. You might not agree with Herbert's proposal, but it is a refreshingly honest opinion to modern ears. When everyone around us is trying to sell us human progress through the purchase of a carbon credit or a Jesus for Dummies to-do listicle, Herbert had the courage to follow Darwinism and his conception of reality to a logical conclusion. Let adaptation take care of the problem. With the way traditional and modern humanistic religions are fighting over the levers of power, we just might get to find out if Herbert's predictions are true. There are a lot of red herrings out there that make such a proposal seem ridiculous. It isn't likely that the Presbyterians currently going on about Christian nationalism are going to run much more than an insurance shop or an all-you-can-eat buffet. But would you really be surprised to find out that the Mormons had taken over the CIA? Is caliphate control of Earth's oil before humanity transitions to renewables really so out of the question? How shocked would you actually be to hear that the cartels had been unified under Pentecostalism and had seized control of chip fabrication at TSMC's Arizona plant? We are currently bearing witness to Tlilaxu face dancers seeking to infiltrate the halls of the US federal government. Both of these guys certainly seem like the type to be in the market for a sand trout dealer if they thought it could guarantee them a 3,500-year reign of terror. Can evolution save us if we allow an earthly god emperor to be an adaptive filter? Perhaps our very great-grandchildren will find out.